From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. More Idaho Matters right now. Though Idaho is still experiencing a bit of cold weather, the song of migrating birds is proof that spring is in the air. And as the days continue to get longer, we're going to start to see more of these returning travelers in larger numbers. From cranes to swans to swallows, birds big and small are making their way back to the Gem State. And some are traveling thousands of miles. It's a journey which many experts are still working to understand, which is exactly what Heidi Ware Carlisle, the Education and Outreach Director of Intermountain Bird Observatory, will be exploring in her upcoming lecture with the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. That will be tomorrow, April 2nd. And we're lucky enough to have her joining us now for a preview of that. Heidi, it's really nice to have you on the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So can we just start with the basics? Why do birds migrate?
Oh, very good question. So, you know, I think we typically talk about, oh, the geese are flying south for the winter. They come back in the summertime. And I think because of that, we often think, oh, the birds are migrating because of the weather. You know, they can't handle the cold, so they have to leave. But that's not exactly true. So most of the bird species that we have in Idaho that migrate are driven to migrate based on food, right? So food equals survival. And so if you're an insect-eating bird that loves to spend the summer in Idaho, you probably have to get out of here once that weather starts getting cold. So we tend to see birds that don't have food available in the winter leave us in Idaho. And then now you might have been out gardening and starting to see some insects are coming back out. Our birds know that that's happening too. So they're starting to come back as well to get that food resource.
So how then do they actually know when it's time to migrate, Heidi? I mean, is it, as you said, because they just start having a lack of nutrients?
Yeah. So they actually, most species, a lot of species use day length. And that makes sense because migration is like running, you know, 20 marathons. It's a really serious undertaking. And if birds waited until they were running out of food to start migrating, they'd be in big trouble. So what they do is they have this diurnal clock and this sense for day length, and they know exactly what time of year it is based on day length. So they know, okay, the days are getting longer. That's going to cue my spring migration. I'm going to fly north. That's also really important for a lot of our species because they're wintering in places like Mexico or Central America, where the weather in Mexico is not really giving you any clues to what the weather is like in Boise, right? So the birds are using day length to say, all right, spring is coming. That means I know the weather in Boise is going to be good soon. I can start my journey back. So yeah, a lot of birds are using day length, but migration research is still continuing. So we're learning all the time about different cues that different species are using to decide when to migrate.
So, you know, as I mentioned in the introduction, you know, some birds travel thousands of miles, right? But how far on average do birds travel during migration?
Yeah, thousands of miles. So off the top of my head, you know, we study calliope hummingbirds and we band them here in Idaho. They nest here and they can migrate more than 2,000 miles to central and southern Mexico each year. Wow. And for a species that, you know, we've caught an 8-year-old calliope hummingbird, that adds up quickly to many, many thousands of miles in that tiny, tiny bird's lifetime. So pretty impressive.
Okay, so how do the birds prepare them themselves for a trip like this? If, as you mentioned, if we're talking 1 to 2,000 miles.
Yeah, so I was just talking about this with my ornithology class, and I'll be talking about it with Osher tomorrow too. So birds rely on fat as their fuel. So fat is like the gas in their gas tank. And so they enter this state called hyperphagy, where they're eating a ton. So they basically get to gorge themselves on all their favorite foods. They get super, super fat. Fat is a great way to store energy because it's lightweight. So if you're a flying animal, that's a really great way to sort of, you know, pack your lunch with you, right? They're not carrying a lot of extra weight, but they're packing a lot of energy in there. And so they do hyperphagy, they get really, really fat, and then they'll fly. Songbirds typically fly at night, hundreds or thousands of miles, and then they'll stop to rest again, refuel, And one of the things I study a lot in the research with the Intermountain Bird Observatory is looking at stopover places. So where are they stopping to fatten up? That tells us where the really good habitat is, right? So they're visiting good habitat, eating a ton. And man, I always joke, like, wouldn't it be nice to be like, you know what? I'd really love to go on a beach vacation right now. Eat all your favorite treats, get super fat. And then by the time you get there, they've burned up all that fat that they stored. And, you know, they're ready for their vacation, right?
I love that. So with that said, then, how in the world do they find their way?
Yeah, man, this is one of my favorite things to talk about. And every time we do an experiment, it seems we learn something new about birds migrating. So we've kind of suspected or known for a long time that the magnetic field of the globe plays a role in a lot of different animal orientation and navigation. So you can look at something as distantly related as a sea turtle, and we think they use a similar mechanism. You know, in the olden days, the experiments were they would tape a magnet to a pigeon's head and realize that it would get lost. So something must be going on there. Nowadays, we're a little more sophisticated. But we believe that birds can actually see the magnetic field of the Earth. And so they're able to know exactly where they are on the globe, even if they've never been there before. So I find this fascinating. You can kidnap a bird, put it somewhere on the planet it's never been before, and it can still find its way back home. And, you know, we still can't fully comprehend how they're able to do that, but we know they can based on experiment.
That's incredible. I mean, that's really something. Okay, so when they are migrating, what kinds of challenges do these birds face?
Great question. So, you know, they face the phenomena they've faced for millions of years, right? Weather can really throw migrating birds off track. If they end up landing in a place with not a lot of food resources, they can be in trouble. Nowadays, migrating birds are facing a lot of human threats, right? Things like light pollution. So I always, in the spring and fall, keep our porch lights and outdoor lights turned off at night because those can really throw off the navigation capabilities of songbirds. We know that along with the magnetic field, birds are using constellations. So they're actually looking at the stars. They know which star is the North Star, and they can use constellations to navigate at night. So keeping a dark sky is really critical for these birds. And that's an issue they face across a lot of the globe, is migrating through areas where, you know, human light pollution is sort of blocking out those stars. Things like window strikes. So I'm actually working with a student at Boise State right now to study which windows are a particular threat to migrating birds. And outdoor cats. That's one of the number one causes of bird mortality across the globe is outdoor cats. So a lot of pressures that they're facing. And so it's pretty amazing that even with all this that they're fighting against, you know, they're able to complete these really long journeys. They're just fascinating.
It really is fascinating. Okay, so you did mention climate change a little bit, but in your opinion, how impacted are the migratory patterns of birds due to climate change?
I mean, it's so tough to say in particular migration, because I think climate change is, you know, it's a full life scale impact. We know from research that where a bird spends the winter and the quality of the habitat on their wintering grounds affects whether they're able to survive migration. And it affects how many babies they have the next year. So there's a lot of trickle down effects of climate change. And I think in particular, we're seeing a lot of, you know, kind of changes in weather patterns. I think, you know, if you made me pick one thing that climate change was doing to migration in particular, I might say that. The other issue, along with these kind of changing weather patterns, is that I remember I mentioned that a lot of these birds are using day length to decide when to migrate. So a yellow warbler in Mexico, the day length is getting longer and it says, okay, you know, by mid-May, the weather should be warm enough in Boise. I can go back. Well, some years the weather in Boise is warm enough in March. The yellow warbler could be starting nesting in March. And so essentially what can happen is you get this mismatch where day length is telling the yellow warblers when they should migrate, but the weather is not matching up with that day length anymore, essentially. So they may arrive when there's not enough insect food to feed their chicks, and they might end up kind of in trouble and out of sync with what's actually going on the ground, if that makes sense.
Okay, so then how then would human activity impact migratory birds?
Yeah, I think those changes, so like light pollution can really impact them. And for the positive, you know, humans are starting to learn, you know, a lot of big cities do lights out programs during migration. So human activity can, you know, benefit birds as well. Like we can make these small changes that, you know, don't impact us too much. Turning my porch lights out at night isn't that big of a deal, but can really help those birds during this long journey. So pretty much between now and middle or end of May, that's one thing people can do is, you know, help out these migrating birds by just turning your lights off at night.
Oh, okay. So something as simple as that. So before I let you go, tell us a little bit about what exactly you'll be discussing tomorrow at OSHR. I mean, you mentioned it briefly, but what can people expect?
Yeah, so the class, it goes for 2 days, and we're going to be covering kind of, you know, the topics we mentioned today. So how are birds migrating? I'll be covering a lot of the research into navigation. So the different ways that we know birds are able to navigate and orient. 1 hour, we'll be focusing just on migration research. So how are people studying, you know, whether it's with transmitters or weather radar? There's a lot of different interesting ways that we have learned what we know about bird migration. And then covering what we don't know, which I find some of the most fascinating things are, you know, wow, we just don't even understand how birds do this. And then topping it off with some talk about conservation too. So yeah, covering kind of the broad range. It's a sampling of pretty much everything you want to know about migration, I would say.
So before I let you go, what kind of birds should we expect to see coming back to Idaho this spring?
Oh, yeah. So pretty darn soon. I always say tax day. So April 15th, our hummingbirds will be coming back. This is the time of year when we start seeing our warblers returning. If you head out right now to, you know, anywhere out near Parma and some of the farm fields, you'll see snow geese. So, yeah, it's a great time of year to get out, bird watch, and see what you can see.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in and talking with us today. I mean, I have to say, I didn't expect to learn about migrating birds and it being so fascinating. So I really do appreciate the conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
We've been talking with Heidi Warr Carlisle. She is the Education and Outreach Director of the Intermountain Bird Observatory, talking about the mysteries of bird migration. She'll actually be speaking more on this topic tomorrow, April 2nd, at OSHR's Lifelong Learning Institute. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.